What's up? This is Mike Fenoya from Amigos, and Amigos Podcast is In the Loop, the legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. Check out OsirisPod.com and stay in the loop. What's up? Mike Fenoya, Amigos Podcast on the Osiris Network, coming to you live from New York City. It's Wednesday. I hope you guys are having a great week. We're getting close to Thanksgiving. I hope you're getting excited. Today I've got part two of my chat with Oteil Burbridge. This was such a great experience for me, and it's an honor to share it with all of you. And Oteil was kind enough to reposted on his social media, and in there he mentioned that not only did he have a good time talking, but he feels like he made a lifelong friend in me, and that hit me right in the feels, and the feeling's mutual. Oteil, thank you so much for opening up and spending time talking with me. There's been a ton of really positive messages from listeners, old and new. And I'd like to welcome the new listeners. Grateful Dean, my buddy Dean, reposted this interview, and folks came over from there. Thank you, Dean. You're the best. You'll be on Amigos soon, and we'll make the world laugh like you had said that you wanted to. And Oteil reposted it. Jambase, everybody has had nothing but nice things to say about hearing what really, you know, is going on inside of artists, and, you know, silencing the critic and radical acceptance, and Oteil's experience with adopting his daughter and his son being born, and all these great things. And it was so cool of him to open up, and I'm really humbled by the messages that everyone's been sending to me about the episode, and asking when part two was coming out, and it's coming in a couple of minutes. So it was really, really exciting to hear how important comedy was to Oteil at an early age. That starving artist time that, you know, anyone that goes for it kind of goes through. It's hard. It's very hard, and you can only get through it by accepting what's coming and not questioning every move you make, which we all do, unfortunately. But there's a lot of good talk still left to be heard, which we'll get to right after I take care of business. So if you're on iTunes, head over and rate and review. We'd love a 5-star rating and a review. Subscribe and tell your friends. If you're on Spotify, you can follow Mike Fenoya. On Twitter and Instagram, it's at Mike, Finoia, and at Amigos, AmigosPod. You could join the Amigos Podcast Discussion Group. You could head over to Mike Fenoya to find out about my comedy dates. Here are a few. November 22nd and 23rd, I'll be at Syracuse Funny Bone in support of my buddy Big J Okerson. 11/26, that's a Tuesday at 8:30. I'm going to be headlining the Comedy Cellar here in the West Village in Manhattan. December 7th, I'll be at Community Beer Works in Buffalo doing two shows. And January 16th to the 18th, I'll be headlining five shows at the Deep Sea Improv. That's two Friday, two Saturday, one Sunday, I believe. And there's going to be more added shortly. And I've got a couple of fish shows peppered in there. I think I'm going to eight more this year. Whew. It's been a lot of fish in 2019. It's really fun to chat with someone who you watch live and you enjoy watching them perform, and then you get to talking with them and you share certain, you know, similarities and ways of viewing the world and ways of dealing with things. And for me to do this interview was very exciting because, and I talk about a couple of things in the next part of it. Oteil gets, we get deep. We get into the loss of his brother, Kofi, and the just how many losses there was in the music world in 2019. It's a rough year, and a lot of them were avoidable. And it's not just music world, it's comedy, it's everything. And you know, there's a lot of times where people feel scared and alone, and you know, it doesn't matter what you're doing, but just know you're not alone. Know that there's always someone to turn to. But we get into how Oteil has kind of utilized all of the experiences that he's had leading up to now to deal with what's gone on this year. And we chat about how he approaches Jerry's music, the Jerry ballads that he sings now. We get into the wisdom of Colonel Bruce Hampton and how we all get by with a little help from our friends, and how he was a sage at a time when Oteil needed it. And he taught Oteil a lot about playing and itself, you know, diving further in while you're playing and leaving it all out on stage. And that's very important as any artist, just to grow, you know. And I talk about how I mentioned at one point early on in this that, you know, I started that the Grateful Dead, I felt like it kind of saved me at a very early age. And I guess what I mean by that is when my folks got back together, I was introduced to a big giant collection of albums that my dad had. He had an unbelievable record collection, like a phenomenal. They melted years later in a garage, and I'm so sad about that. But they were there when I needed them, and I sort of felt, you know, alone and confused. And I had friends, and I played sports, and I was, you know, doing all that, but in my free time and a lot of hours where I was just sort of trying to figure out, you know, things, I would listen to music. I would play with my dad's records, and because they were out and they were stacked up, and I was scared of a lot of it. A lot of it just sounded like noise and screeching and what have you. But the Grateful Dead, for some reason, always just sounded really cool. And it sounded like just, I don't know, a sound I heard before. And I loved it. And to this day, it's like medicine. And that's what I mean when I say that the Grateful Dead, I've kind of found it at such a young age. Because, I mean, I found a lot of things. But my friends saved me. My family saved me. My, you know, sports and school and whatever. But I always liked the music of the Grateful Dead. And that's what I meant by that. But in this, we get into the power of all of these things, and it's deep and it's heavy. And I thank Oteil for his time, and I thank all of you for listening. And we've got a lot of back episodes for you new listeners that if you want to go back and check out some cool chats, it's all there for you here on Amigos Pod. So also, folks, I'd love to give a congratulations and a big shout out to Tom Marshall and RJ and everybody here at Team Osiris and Jesse for putting together the After Midnight series, highlighting the 20-year anniversary of Phish's Big Cypress New Year's Eve celebration that brought in the millennium down in the Everglades. I was there, and it changed my life like it did anybody that was there. They just did the impossible and played all night long, and I don't think any of us came back the same. So check that out. You can go to Amigos Pod and Osiris Pod, and I'll put up all the links to find it. You can find it on our social media and search After Midnight. Everybody, enjoy this part two with Oteil. Thank you again, Oteil. And everybody, have a great and safe week. Talk to you soon. Peace. Osiris. There's been a lot of new life coming into your life. And, you know, the loss of your brother, I'm very sorry.
Thank you.
And Neil Casale this year.
I mean, so many people, we've been losing so many people since 2017. I just thought, man, is it ever going to stop? This year was really, this year is hard.
Yeah. And I'm very sorry about it. And I wanted to know, like, how do you deal with it personally? Are you someone who,
I became a much more spiritual person around the year 2000. So I took myself to the bottom and fortunately received real grace to get another chance to do it again, you know, to start over. So I think about these things a lot anyway, and I have since then. So now it's going to be 20 years, you know, and boy, is it a good thing, because otherwise this year might have just taken me completely down.
Yeah.
But I know how to give Kofi's death. I know how to make it a seed that's planted that'll eventually bear some fruit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's what we do in response to it. And so it comes out when I'm teaching students, you know. And
yeah.
We get into harmony and whatever and rhythm and blah, blah, blah. But then I want to talk to them just about life. Because, like, what is that? You're not going to get to play these notes if you get pulled out by the riptide that comes with drinking or sex or drugs or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It could be anything, food, gambling, what, you know, we can get addicted to anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we got to deal with that, because you won't be here to play music if you don't deal with that.
Yeah.
So that's one of the big ways that, I process Kofi's death, you know, talk about his death and why he died and why he didn't have to die and how we tried, you know?
Yeah.
And, but he pushed us away, you know, and that's what I did. That's what any addict will do. Will isolate, and you know, we're the worst counsel to have, you know,
yeah.
It's our own addicted brain, you know? So, and then also, you know, through, my marriage, through being a father, you know, like they're, what do you say? Like cautionary tales,
yeah.
You know, you make sure, okay, this feels true on paper, but now here we saw it play out in real life, right in front of your eyes, like as close to you as it can get.
Right.
So now there's the proof of what was written down and has been written down for millennia,
mm-hmm.
as these universal laws and truths, right? Now you saw it play out again, not just in the newspaper, right next to you.
Yeah, at home.
Yeah, so now we don't need any more, you know, now you got to be the person telling the story, you know?
Yeah.
And so that, I deal with it that way, and it makes every moment that I have with Nigel and Kavi and Jess more meaningful, because it's like, you know, I was always hoping Kofi was going to get to this place. I went through the exact same thing he went through. My sisters went through it, even though they're not musicians. But every human goes through this, you know, this war with yourself, with your free will, you know, with your yin side.
Yeah.
Which we need. You know, it all serves a purpose. But you have to, I don't want to say control it, you know, because that's what addiction is when you can't control it.
Right.
So what do you do when you can't control it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then that's when the spiritual part comes in, because now I need help.
Yeah.
I can't do it by myself.
It's a sense of surrender.
And that's what I told Kofi, you know, I was like, you know, I don't know how to do it. Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. But you can't get it until you get it. And a lot of times it's at that moment when you're at the bottom. And the danger is that your bottom might kill you physically. My bottom was spiritual and emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And my body was in no danger at all. I mean, I had put it in danger, but it had escaped danger.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at the time when I hit my bottom, my body was in no danger.
Got it.
So I just had to deal with my mind and my spirit and my emotions and a little bit of my body chemistry. I had to take some chemicals out of my body that were getting regularly put in.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I understand.
Mostly alcohol, which I don't know if alcohol is a chemical, but...
Oh, I think it is. You know? Yeah, but totally.
That was really... It still is just like, man, it just doesn't...
When you had that spiritual awakening, was it something that you sought out, or was it something that hit you,
kind
of blindsided
you? It was something that I asked for in a moment of desperation, and then it was like an episode of The Outer Limits, where I heard voices in the whole nine yards,
wow.
And they talked to me, and I just was like, okay, I have had so many metaphysical things happen to me since I was a childhood that the critic was not anywhere in sight.
Yeah.
For me to go, is this in your head? Is this what? You know, I asked for it. It came immediately. I heard a voice that said, we're here for you. And I was like, holy. And so immediately, because I was desperate,
yeah,
I started asking them. And I was like, well, why didn't you come before? And they said, you didn't ask right. Mm. I was like, what do you mean?
Wow.
They said, you asked, like, you know, show me a sign. When we had done that innumerable times and you ignored them.
Interesting.
So you didn't come at us like, you know, I'm paraphrasing.
Of course.
You didn't come at us like, you know, I'm wrong and I've tried everything I know how to do and I don't, and I need your help right now, which is literally what I said.
Wow.
I was like, you know, I don't know if there is a God or what to call you. Like, I feel you're there, but I don't know who's right and who's wrong,
mm-hmm.
whether your name is Jesus or Allah or Jehovah or what, like, you know.
Yeah.
And many of many, many other names. I was like, all that aside, I need some fucking help right now. Like, I'm at the end. I'm 35 or whatever I was at the time. I've tried for all these years and I just can't do it anymore, man. You know, mm-hmm. I cannot do it anymore. And if you're not there, I'm doomed.
Sure.
And then it was like, we're here for you. Like, what?
You said the right words.
And that's what they told me.
Wow, man.
They said you finally came at us correctly. And so for like a half an hour, I engaged them fully with all the questions that I had, you know?
Wow.
And they told me at one point, they said, you know, you're messing around. You think like you're just splashing your feet in like the puddles of the dark side. You're not, you know.
Mm.
But they're like, you have no idea, dude. You have no idea. You could so easily be taken out. And they didn't use the word riptide, but that's really, to me, what it's like.
Yeah.
Like, you could just be in over your head so quick, dude, and gone.
Yeah.
Done. Over.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, well, what am I supposed to do? They said, you need to stop what you're doing, and you need to stop right now. And they did something to me, and my knees buckled out from under me, man. I felt all this stuff, like, rushing out of me. Like, I was in the shower, like...
Wow.
It felt like I was throwing up, but I wasn't physically throwing up, but I was throwing up something. I could see it.
It's like a purge.
In my mind's eye, yeah. It was a total purge.
Wow.
And then I didn't feel any temptation for anything for like probably a couple of months.
Wow.
I quit smoking weed there for like a year and a half, 2 years or something, you mm-hmm. know, and just like to see could I do it like, you know. Am I a slave to weed?
Mm.
Am I addicted to it? Like what, you know, let's find out.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
You know, black people went through all this slavery and stuff. My literal ancestors went through that shit for you to become a slave to like a drug or alcohol or something.
Yeah,
like, really?
Yeah.
Is that how this is going to go? You know?
Yeah.
So I did it and I was fine. And that's why I smoke again. Cause I was like, I could live without it.
Of course.
You know,
yeah.
I put it down. I had to put it down in India. But all these other things, and that's when I started studying theology and really going back and, like, digging into, you know, a number of different religions, but starting with the Bible, you know, starting with the Old Testament, going front to back, you know, and I knew all these scholars where I was living in Birmingham, Alabama, like Jim Barnett, Dr. Barnett. He teaches religion classes at a university there, but his dad also stood up with Martin Luther King back in the day. And as a white guy, they were getting, you know, death threats from the Klan and shit, just like black people were, you know what I mean?
It's
and so they were living out their theology, you know? So I would find some, you know, what's this verse in this, you know, what's up with that? That doesn't make any sense at all. And he goes, hey, check out this book. You know, it's like, I got this huge collection of books trying to sort through the theology, you know, and, but I've also, you know, it's like when you see, when you're not reading like a story about some ancient thing, but you're reading something that's so old and you're seeing yourself in it, that's when it starts really working on you, man. Like working magic on you. You know, there's this guy, Rob Bell. He said, the question is not, did Adam and Eve happen? The question is, does Adam and Eve happen? And then you realize, oh man.
Yeah.
That book has your number by page two. Like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, totally, man. I hear you.
Adam, why are you hiding from me?
Mm-hmm.
Because I was ashamed of my nakedness. Who told you to be ashamed? I didn't tell you to be ashamed of your nakedness. I mean, dude, that's like, how much shit does that nail in all of our lives?
Yeah, in two sentences.
Who told you to be ashamed? Mm-hmm. The fucking critic.
The critic.
Snake, the whatever, you know,
yeah.
The devil. That's, we are, people that say, well, you know, I'm God. I'm fine with that.
Yep.
But you also have to admit that you're also the devil.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I can accept one, but not without the other.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
So.
That's an important moment in your life. I mean, it changed everything.
It changed everything, dude. It changed my entire course of my life to this day. It's, you know, and so
that's fantastic.
It's now that this year has come. Now
you needed it.
This horrible year, I have what I need to process it. You know,
a lyric from Black Peter, which we get full circle here with Grateful Dead and Robert Hunter. See here how everything leads up to this day. And it's just like any other day that's ever been. I think about that lyric. Yeah. So it's just one verse in one song that just really culminates so many things in my life, where it's like everything leads up to right now, and all the things that we've packed along the way has prepared us for the moment right now. And it's so important that we have those pitfalls and we don't let them, like you said, pull us out into to the riptide. I mean, there are times where, you know, you're alone and you kind of forget who you even are. You're in a hotel and you're somewhere in America, and what did I do? I have to go up and do this, or I have to do that. And for a minute, you don't even know what being you are. And it's those moments
which can be good and bad.
Exactly.
It can be positive or negative.
That's when you're like, critic, are you there? Can I have someone to talk to? But man, that's really wild.
And I wish people, you know, my thing, you know, I feel like it's so sad that these sacred books come with so much baggage, because to me, first, they're works of art, you know?
Yeah.
They're stories and letters and poems and songs. And so on one level, like Hunter and Barlow, their writing is as important
Shakespearean.
As the Bible is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Harry Potter is to me. Or Star
me too,
Wars,
man. Yeah.
Or Star Trek.
Yep.
Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, these are all works of art, and I think if we could look at, if we could even call them something else besides Bibles, you know,
I hear what you're
saying.
That's
why I call them sacred writings, you know.
Yeah.
But even that, even if I say sacred, has some baggage on it, because it, unless I say that I also think Harry Potter is sacred and Star Wars and these songs and, you know,
yeah, yeah.
so that to clarify that, you know what I mean? Because they are. It's all, these are all works of art. That's what art is for, is to help us sort the shit out.
Exactly, exactly. Know? And that's so true. And I have to ask you, because it really makes me happy to hear you're a Harry Potter fan, because I kind of am too. What's your favorite, do you have a favorite book or a favorite movie? Man. Out of all of them, if you had to choose one? Dude, I'm so happy you like Harry Potter.
You're talking. It's like choosing a favorite Grateful Dead song, dude. That's not possible.
I'd have to say, I just went back and watched The Prisoner of Azkaban.
I thought that was pretty incredible.
I've
read all the books multiple times and seen all the movies multiple times.
Yep. I'm just discovering it at what I find is that I tend to poo-poo things too quick.
Yeah.
And then I go back and I watch it and listen to it and realize it. I do that with bands sometimes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, dude, I missed out. But just like you didn't ask for the help at the right time, I feel like art and music maybe finds you at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And you go, I'm not ready for that right now. The Grateful Dead saved me at a very early age.
Yeah.
Like 8, 9 years old, I fell madly in love with the Jerry's voice, Dire Wolf, Box of Rain, that American Beauty soundscape to me was like, it connected something that was disconnected.
Yeah.
And I right away was like, this is it. And it found me at the right time, and it stayed with me through all these years.
For sure.
Whether it was good times, bad, you know, Stella Blue means something more to me now than it did when I was, you know, 12 or 13 or whatever it was. But it you know, that
something in it just resonated.
Yeah.
It's so, that's what the power of this music is to me, man. It's so, it's just electric folk music. You know, that's why I didn't get it. You know, my thing was so more oriented towards musicianship. Like, you know, growing up, you know, all the singers in the black tradition, you know, Aretha and Stevie
Wonder.
I mean, you just can go on back from the earliest gospel and blues up through everything, you know, that's just like.
There's so much.
So that, like, the singing in the Grateful Dead was a real barrier for me.
Especially in 92.
Now it's like, you know, and I've told a number of friends about this, you know, since Kofi passed, and it happened before, but especially this year with Kofi's passing, man, Jerry's voice and the sound of his guitar is literally like medicine to me. Yeah. And now I see what everybody got. You got it at 8, 9. You know what I mean? And it took me till 50, but now, you know, I also got my folk music education. That's one thing my dad wasn't really, he was into more of the guys that had a lot of chops, so it's classical jazz stuff,
big
like
band
that.
Stuff like bigger, more
just, you had to have chops, you know, because they were telling black people, you know, you're less than a human. And then here's the Harlem Renaissance, where you're seeing all this great, like, you know, these guys can play on the level of classical musicians, but the classical musicians can't improvise. So who's inferior to who? You know what
I
mean?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
I don't
want
to hear that. It left a more of a blind spot as far as the folk music.
Yeah.
I didn't get that part, which is just a basic human thing.
Yeah.
I'm in pain. This is medicine. Not that it wasn't, because it certainly was medicine. Jazz was medicine to my dad. I mean, it was like his religion. Really,
yeah, totally. You know? Totally.
But that's, you know, why I don't think I wasn't doing that, like, radical acceptance thing. Like, Colonel Bruce taught me all that, like, how to hear just a person's life in their music. And it ruined a lot of music for me, because it, I could hear when someone was covering up, not telling me, which he accused me of all the time.
Really?
He was like, you're giving me 20% of what you really are. I don't want to hear what you practiced.
Wow.
And he's like, what you are is way bigger than this small, narrow confines of what you think you are.
Huh.
You know, and I want...
What a sage at the time,
more
huh?
More of that. Yeah, from someone who couldn't really play, which is why I knew God, the universe, whatever you want to call it. I was meant to meet Bruce to get that other piece.
Yeah.
Because without him, no Allman Brothers, no Grateful Dead.
Man.
Because I wouldn't have heard. I would have been like the snobby, you know.
It would have went a different direction.
I would have been too snobby to like give it a fair shake.
Well, you know what I mean? Thinking about that now and at the age that you are and what you've learned and how you said Jerry's voice and guitar playing is like medicine. You sing some of Jerry's ballads.
That's a trip.
And we all love it and we want more of it. But how do you approach that? Like when you say that's a trip, like everybody loves when O'Teal sings. And
just so crazy. I didn't find out I could actually sing till Dead and Company because I was using inner ear monitors.
Uh-huh.
And when I would try to sing before, you're trying to scream over the band and the PA. And I didn't have that training singing like without having to do that. And then when I got my inner ears and I was doing background vocals, I found I could hit the pitches a lot better.
Yeah.
And I could hit higher notes than I thought I could hit because I wasn't screaming them.
Yeah.
I was just going higher. Yeah. And I went, maybe I can sing, you know? And so then I tried to, I think China Doll was my first one, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
And
you nailed it.
And I was like, wow. But like my first time finding this out is like in a stadium.
<You know>? Trial by fire.
Yeah. Right? And I couldn't hear people's reaction because of my inner ears, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I asked my wife, I was like, did they like it? And she was like, could you not hear like as soon as you open your mouth what happened? I was like, no, I don't really have the audience in my inner ears.
Yeah.
You know, and I was so like focused on, you know, do not fuck this up. Please, God, you talk about prayer.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man, I was just like, just help me. You know, I'm going to need it, dude. You know?
Yeah.
And so then I put some of the audience in my ears.
Oh, cool.
And so then the next time I would sing, like, you know, even if, like, I walk up to the mic before I even get it out, you know, because and I was just overwhelmed. So it's been a really weird experience.
Yeah.
But I never thought I would be singing lead at stadiums to screaming people. And people are crying. And I know it's not all because of like how I'm singing it. There's a lot of emotion attached to Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
And these songs that, you know, probably weren't going to be done otherwise.
I think that,
you know, it's
a
like
big
bringing
relief.
Home lost children. In a way.
Yes.
You
yes.
know what I mean?
Yes.
And
oh my
so
God,
there's all that wrapped up. It's not that I'm such a great singer, but, you know, like with that in mind, the short answer to your question is like how I approach it is as a 50-year-old, as a 55-year-old.
Yeah.
Like as someone who's been through, now you know all my spiritual journey, that whole story, the people in my life that have passed away. That didn't have to, right?
Yeah.
For all the same reasons, my wife, Jess, my son, my firstborn, Nigel, now Kavi, for coming from Allahabad, India, in the worst of circumstances, you know?
Yeah.
And all that, you know, with all that Colonel Bruce taught me, you know, he said this a long time ago. He said, I want to hear, he said, if you inherited $1 million or if your mom died, you'd play the same solo because you're just playing what you practice. I want to hear
Jesus,
not just you being great. I want to hear that too. You are great, so be great. But I also want to hear when your heart was broken. I want to hear you embarrass yourself. I want to hear you be funny. I want to hear when somebody dies. I want to hear when you made it over addiction and when you met love, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's how I approach Jerry's songs with all that stuff. And then I don't have to do anything. You know, I've lived all this stuff. You know, ask for God to help me when I'm about to open my mouth. Because who knows, it could go wrong and then I just go. And I carry all that with me, in some ways, whether I like it or not. It was time for me to sing Jerry ballads now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and for some reason, maybe I wasn't meant to get it early back then. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't have the answers. I don't even know where my own pancreas is. So, you know, I don't know anything. But I.
It's beautiful, though.
Yeah, it's. It was time. Like, the time is now for me to do it. And yeah. Not 1 minute before, you know?
Yeah, man.
So I was ready to sing them, I guess. And then when I was ready is when I got tapped.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm grateful. It's working out great, you know?
Do those guys, the Bobby and Billy and Mickey, you know, Jerry is, he's with everybody all the time. And yeah. Those three specifically, and Phil, of course. But
yeah.
Do they ever, like, after the show, or when you do a Jerry, when you do a...
They're very supportive, yeah, for yeah. sure.
That's a very...
Bill always lets me know right away. As soon as the song's done, he's pointing at me, you know?
Yeah.
And he just, you know...
Yeah.
But yeah, they've all been very, very supportive and encouraging of me doing that. And yeah. even the people in the organization that are not in the band, you know, not yeah. on stage.
Yeah.
And
the family,
like Matt Bush is the one that told me to do Comes a Time, you know. And then a lot of people, I'll tell you one that's funny because, again, this is about the judgment and the critic and all that stuff.
Yeah.
A bunch of fans had... I made a list. When fans would suggest stuff, I would just write it down. I was compiling a list from everybody and within the organization and then just fans writing it on Facebook or Instagram or something. So many people wanted me to do High Time. And so I made a YouTube playlist of all these songs, and I listened, and I just picked my favorites out of them.
Yep.
And High Time, I just wasn't really feeling it, you know?
Sure.
And then Kemeny... one day was saying, man, you really ought to take a look at High Time. I was like, damn it. Everybody keeps saying that. And I've listened to it. And let me just go back. Cause I really trust Kemeny, you know?
Of course. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I said, O'Teal, don't listen to it. Learn it. Just learn it.
Yeah.
Because you know what the critic thinks of it.
Yes.
Not that I don't like. I'm not feeling that one as much as I'm feeling, you know?
Yeah, right.
So I learned it. Dude, I could not get that song out of my head literally for like 2 months.
Yeah.
Wake up, it's right there. All day long, it keeps coming back.
No
At night, I lay down, it's back.
Jeez. You know?
And I knew I could sing it because when I learn it, I get it to the point where I'm like, okay, I could take this to the stage now.
Yeah, totally.
And then I don't have to, like, keep doing it over and over, you know?
I can see it. It's right in that China Doll register.
It just, some of those. Man.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's why.
Wow. My time
is so great. But you needed to learn it.
Yep.
To find, and it's been that way as a rule with the music of the Grateful Dead. Like, now that I've learned the songs.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, man, these guys are so much deeper
mm-hmm.
than I realize. How did I miss this? You know? And so, like, when people ask me about favorites, I'm like, I can drop 50 favorites.
And also, I think that one of the most important things, just like being a real human, you're not always happy. You're not always angry. You're not always... China Doll's not always your favorite. Mississippi Half Step's not always your favorite. Victim or the Crime might not. It changes as you change, you know? And I think selfishly, one song that I've always wanted to see you guys tackle, Mission in the Rain.
Yeah.
That was one that I really think that, like, your soulful take on it would be pretty neat.
I've done that with Melvin.
Yeah.
And, but I wasn't singing it at the time.
Mm-hmm. I just think that's a very
I've been
beautiful...
really working on Built to Last. Built to Last is hard. It's high, man. It's up there for me. But I'll check that one out again.
I think it's really a beautiful.
I just go back sometimes if I have free time at home.
Yeah.
I'll just learn another Jerry tune.
Yeah. You know, well, that seems like a pretty great project to have.
Yeah, I mean, this is this is my homework. Wah, wah, wah. Yeah, you know.
Like. I feel so bad for you. I like how you and John and Jeff, I like seeing you three play together Yeah. It's becoming this cool, neat, like, little trio within the...
Yeah.
I really love the way that you guys all, like, pick up off of each other quite a bit. And I just wanted to... It's you guys are just evolving every time you play. You three in particular. And I just wanted to get your thoughts
You know, we're the ones... Well, me and John, more so than Jeff. We're playing catch-up, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it does... It happens... from just playing together night after night. Like, that's why I like a band, you know. I prefer to be in a band than, like, be a studio musician or just be, like, a hired gun playing with different people all the time.
Sure.
Because when you're in a band, then there's that group evolution.
Yeah.
Like, once you find each other, then these five things join together in one big animal, and then the animal goes through its growth, you know.
Mm. Yeah, totally, man.
Toddler, teenager, you know what I mean? Like, you're going
rebellious.
Yeah, you're going through the phases and the evolution together, and so it's inevitable if you all have that intention, you know.
Yep.
And I think, although I don't really perceive me and Kimenny and John's thing as separate, I kind of can see it in a way, just because we're younger. So there is that,
maybe that's what it might be. There's a
younger dynamic thing going on, and that grows too, you know what I mean? In a way that the older dynamic doesn't.
Yeah. I think it's maybe just I like seeing how, like, Jeff's out of this world.
Yeah.
I mean, he really is out of this world. And to see, like, maybe with you and John, and he kind of just lays a nice... Jeff lays a nice landscape for you guys to play in or something. I don't know what it is. It's just really...
I can see how we're like the kids playing in the front yard.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And Bobby's sitting on the porch going, don't mess up my flowers.
Fortunately, we're pretty much out of that phase now.
I know,
where we get in trouble for it, you know? But, and that's all cool, too. I realize, you know... going through all this stuff and switching sides and all that, you know. And,
yeah.
And then I was like, you know, when we made it through the other side, I was like, oh, now you're in the band.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's now this is your story.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's a whole other band now.
You had to go through all that, you know?
Yeah.
And it took years.
Yep.
But that's how it goes.
Yeah.
That's, you know?
Yep. And in between all of this and playing with them and playing with the family and all of that, you squeezed in a quick Vita Blue.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah. How fun was that?
Super fun, because we're older and wiser now. Like, you know, I like right when I was doing that was when I was going through my whole spiritual change. That's when I met love.
Mm.
And it was it was a crazy thing to go through while still being squarely in the midst, ground zero of the same old world that is like diametrically opposed, almost seemingly, to what I was going through. And I think Paige was going through a divorce back then.
Yeah.
And Russell was just raging back then, you know? So we were all in a much better place now doing it. And that's what the experience was like. Wow, look at us back then. Like, you can see yourself more objectively back then and know how good you have it. Like, the gratitude is right there.
Sure.
You don't have to search for it at all. Like, you're just like, and we could feel that in a look, you know, like I can look at Paige and we're just like, man, this is really good. We're in such a great place.
Right? You guys have such an incredible instant connection when you guys play together. It's such a unique sound, and you added another component this time around, which was great. Did he just get in touch and say, like, hey, we're gonna, like, here's the music?
Yeah, he was like, you know, I think I want to do it again.
Yeah.
And he wanted to do it in Miami, which was great because I live in Boca, so I was close.
Nice.
And I think they were actually talking about, we may do it in Miami, or we may do it somewhere else. It was like really cold. I was like, it's a lot warmer here, bro. Like, come on, you know.
You're sending propaganda.
I just was like, dude, this is a no-brainer. Like,
totally.
You know,
yeah.
Think of the money you'll save in hotels. You know, like, just You know, that's amazing. So we ended up doing it.
You're sending restaurant menus, like, oh, look at this.
He knew, you know, yeah. But
oh, that's so cool.
Because we did a record in Miami before at the Bee Gees old studio, which is now closed. It's like a strip mall or something. But so he knew, you know. And fortunately, he made the decision to do it down there, you know.
Yeah.
But it really was. Yeah, he just was like, "What do you think about doing it again?" I was like, "Hell yeah, man. Come on, it's going to be a lot better this time. Yeah, I'm in a way better place this time. Like, I've sorted it out now."
Well, and you could hear it. You guys sounded, it was dynamite. It was really great. And, you know, this is a question that I wanted to ask you about. Like, you just did the Garden, right?
Yeah.
We're here in New York. With Paige, you did the Cap.
Yeah.
So, right up the road, totally different size room, totally different history, totally. Personally, do you dig the big arenas, stadiums, or do you like the kind of smaller, intimate theaters, or do you have a preference?
You know what? I'd like all the above.
Yeah.
What I don't really like that much is the amphitheaters, because the sound, for some reason, we just struggle so much, and it's really hard for Bob, and it makes it hard for everybody. You know? Stadiums are great because there's no ceiling.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the arenas don't seem to challenge us sound-wise as much as the amphitheaters. As long as the sound's good, I'm okay with, you know, Coffee House on up to, like, Gillette Stadium.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's
They're
cool.
all different. It's like a buffet, you know?
Yeah, totally. That's so cool. And I wanted to ask you one more thing. When you're on stage and you're standing on the pad and...
I got rid of that thing.
You're not doing
thankfully.
It. Yeah. Was it something... Was it throwing...
It was the whole sound thing that Bob just does, you know, wants to hear barely any bass on stage. And when you've lost a lot of hearing in the higher registers, when things get louder, you're not hearing the higher stuff. You're hearing the lower stuff get louder.
Mm.
So it just becomes this, I'm assuming, like a big roar in his ears, you know, and things are not defined. Mm. So I had that pad because I was like, you know, I'm playing bass and I can't feel it. It doesn't feel like a bass. If the air's not hitting the back of my calves.
Yeah, right.
I play barefoot so I can feel more low-end vibrations just in the skin of my feet.
Right.
And I was like, I can't play like this, you know. So they recommended this pad and it really helped a lot. Well, then my wife goes, "Oteel, all these people are writing in that you're not having fun anymore." And I was like, "What?" Yeah, I was like, why are they writing that? She's like, "Well, you never move around. You usually dance around and you're like moving around and you're just standing there in one place." And I was like, "Oh shit, it's this fucking pad. Like I'm confined 2 square foot, you know, or 3 square." And I was like, "Man," and I do want to move around. I do want to, you know, I'm a dancer.
Yeah.
I like to dance. Fuck. And so I went to Derek Featherstone, the sound guy, and you know, he designed Phil's rig and the PA, and like you know, it's constantly working with Bob on sound issues and stuff. And I was like, "Look, man, I need to get off this fucking pad, and I'm a bass player. I got to be able to play my bass."
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to turn it up loud. I never liked it super loud.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I came from playing small clubs.
Right. But you got to feel it.
Yeah. I mean, Warren always wanted me to turn up in the Allman Brothers. I was like, "Dude, I'm loud enough already." Mm-hmm. He got an amp over on his side where he could turn me up louder on his side. Because he put it where you want it. I'm good right here. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I was like, "This, I'm not going to go crazy, but I need some, you know."
Yeah.
So I thought maybe if I get an 18-inch speaker, a bigger speaker at a lower volume, I'll still feel the air, but it won't be like driving Bob nuts. You know?
Yeah.
So basically, just had a talk with him and Mayer, too, just said, "Look, man, we got to get Oteel like sorted out.
Yeah.
He needs to be able to play the bass and feel it and get off, you know."
Yeah.
Like, I'm in the band, too. I got to be able to get off, too, you know.
Yeah.
Like. Yeah. And he said, "Cool," and we got rid of the pad. And ever since then, I've been able to, like...
Ah, that's cool, man.
...be free.
And you're dancing around, having a good time.
I mean, the pad was great, but yeah,
I always just wondered about it. You know what I mean? Like, it was when I read what you wrote about it and how it would send the lower, you know, you would feel it. I'm like, wow, it's very interesting. And then I started to think about how, yeah, with all the dynamics up there and everybody needing to hear everything just so, and inner ear and all that.
Yeah. Well, even if my amp is completely off on stage, the bass can get too loud for Bob in the speakers. Because think of all the bass speakers that dwarf what I have.
I know.
It's a little bitty. So once it gets going out front, it could be too loud for him there, especially in amphitheaters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not so in stadiums.
Yep.
We don't have that problem, and we don't have it. Really, it doesn't seem to be an issue in arenas.
Wow.
But in amphitheaters, it's just the worst. Like, I'm like, my amp's off. I don't know how much lower to go than off.
Yeah, you can't.
I'm all the way off, dude. So now I have inner ears. I have it in my ears. So
how fantastic is that with technology? You can, like, put a little bit of audience. You can turn yourself loud. That's wonderful.
So my bass is always jamming
in my
ears. It doesn't matter what is going on.
Well, you're doing a fantastic job, and it's an honor to chat with you. And thank you
too,
so
man.
Much, man. It's
we
really... got to
talk a lot more and hang.
Everyone, thank you so much for listening, and please check out all things Oteal on social media.
I mean, I'm easy to find. You put Oteal Burbridge in, and you'll find it.
Verified.
Yeah,
the little blue
pages.
Yes.
Yeah, you know.
Thank you so much for everything, man.
Thank you, man. Adios.